I've been watching hockey since, as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
The Minnesota line. Power play over. Bochema scores. A rocket pass Dubnyk, and the Ducks have a 1-0 lead. Now Vanek's back in for Minnesota. Vanek works his way down low. Fires. He scores! Parisi on the rebound! And the Wild have tied it. Kessler ridden into the boards by Spurgeon. Dumba puts on the brakes. Turn it over. Put it up to the point. The shot is tipped out front by Silverberg, and they score. The Ducks come into St. Paul and hand the Wild a 2-1 loss.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the On the Ice radio show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Back in studio after a massive state tournament last weekend with record crowds, great storylines, and all sorts of things happening. Coming up in today's show, we'll have Chad Graff, who's boarding the plane right now. He's a gamer. He's going to step up and join us, talk a little Wild hockey as he's headed off to St. Louis. And then also we're going to have in studio Trent Eigner and a couple of special guests from the Lakeville North Panthers. We'll be talking about their great state tournament run as well. We will be talking to Bill Robertson from the WCHA. And also, if he's available and not on the ice in Denver, Derek Plant from the UMD Bulldogs. So action-packed show. Without further ado, Chad, good morning to you. And it was a 2-1 loss against a very good Anaheim Mighty Ducks, Ducks team from Anaheim.
Just the regular Ducks. It's been a pretty busy week in high school hockey and college hockey and the NHL. It was fun listening to your recap that I got to tune in for that Lakeville North segment. But the Wild, you know, they continue to do what they've done, and that they're beating up on the smaller teams. They're beating up on the speedy teams. The question that the Wild have yet to answer is whether in a seven-game playoff series or even in, you know, a smaller season series, the Wild can play with a team that is heavy, whether they can play with a physical team, the likes of Anaheim, who, of course, beat them 2-1 last night, which closed out the season series 3-0. So they get another chance. They have little time and little rest now as they head to St. Louis. And Illinois head to St. Louis, but St. Louis is a place that the Wild have not won in regulation since 2007. And this is a very potential first-round matchup. So the Wild, absolutely, you know, even if the Wild don't win tonight, if they have a game where they are at least physical with St. Louis, where they show that they can play, I think that's got to be a positive for them.
Well, and they've looked to address that. Chris Stewart with a fight 10 seconds into the game with Clayton Stoner yesterday. He got into a dust-up before. I mean, it's not all about fights. It's about playing heavy and strong. And, you know, you mentioned about the bigger, tougher teams, and, you know, that's been a concern. I think we've been talking about that a lot all year on this show. St. Louis is another one of those teams. So not only do you play Anaheim last night, you get on the plane, you go to a place you haven't won a regulation since 2007, and oh, guess what? You're going to really have to scrap and fight through some really tough terrain there.
Yeah, and I think the Chris Stewart piece is a really important part of it, and I'm glad you brought that up. When they traded for him a second-round pick after already having Bergenheim, after having Carter and Zucker and Cook likely coming back at some point, I was a little skeptical of that move, but I've got to say he's been very good in his brief time in Minnesota. It's only been, I think, six games now, but he was throwing the body around. He leveled Clayton Stoner last night, and as Wild fans saw Stoner for 5 years, it's not hard to knock, or it's not easy to knock him down. So Stewart has been flying around. He's been doing more than fighting. He's been bringing a physical game. I think that the line with him and Mikko Koivu and Nino Niederreiter has done well. Nino had a bunch of good chances last night. Stewart had a bunch of good chances. Niederreiter had a chance with 26 seconds last night. And Gibson sprawled over and made a heck of a save to help Anaheim eventually win that game. But I think that's been arguably the Wild's best line in the last 2 weeks or so, is that Stuart Niederreiter and Mikko Koivu line.
Well, therein lies the question, too. You know, I've always been a believer of not liking to disrupt the apple cart, especially when you're in a time of need and you have to get things done. And, you know, Chris Stewart was the last person I would have ever thought would have been playing on one of the top six lines in Minnesota. And those lines were going so well, and they're scoring goals at huge clips. Is there some level of concern about disrupting chemistry, or do you just not care about that at this stage?
I think there's certainly some concern, but I think at the same time there's definitely a level of, hey, this is March. We're still, you know, while it may seem a little comfortable, the Wild are still in the thick of a wild card battle, and they still very well could miss the playoffs, though I don't think they will. But this is still, you know, this is not over, and there has to be a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling with the Wild. So because of, you know, they know that things are going to change as they start to get guys back. Matt Cook is probably a couple weeks away, but Jason Zucker, they're hoping, could come back for a first-round playoff series, maybe even by the end of the regular season. That would shake up the lines a little bit. And Mike Yeo has said in the past, he really feels what that Stewart and Koivu combination could really use is a guy like Jason Zucker who can fly up the ice and can score in transition. So that's a possibility. So they know as they go forward that the lines that they have now are far from set. And while they're not completely comfortable, and while there is, you know, a feeling of wanting to make sure that they still have the chemistry, that, you know, I mean, at the same time, this was a team, barring Devin Dubnyk, that little had changed, and they went from a team that was just dismal at the beginning of January and in December to one of the best teams in the NHL. So, you know, this is still a very capable team, even without adding Bergenheim or Leopold or Stewart as they have.
Well, the interesting point to your comment there is, yes, you do add Dubnyk, suddenly the team plays from dismal to lights out the way they've been. As we say, though, I just get concerned of not concerned, but you start to watch the pace that this team's been delivering at. It's been awesome. And, you know, they've been the hottest team in the NHL since that time and since the All-Star break. But this is going to be, you know, each week is a moment of truth. Nothing has changed. You know, I know they've got a nice, steady foothold. I have been saying, you know, at one point when they're 4 points behind the Hawks there, what are they, three now or whatever it is? I was just saying, boy, if this hockey club could propel itself past Chicago Blackhawks into third place in the Central Division, it's not out of the question, correct, Chad? I mean, that's something I don't think is talked about enough.
Well, it's very difficult. I think at this point, the Wild, because they didn't win last night and things have changed, they're now, I believe, 5 points back, and Chicago has a game in hand. So it's tough to make up that difference, especially when you look at what they have left. Chicago, less than half of their games remaining are against teams that currently own a playoff spot. Starting last night, the Wild, 15 games, 13 of them are against teams. And one of those two games that are not against the playoff team, that's Winnipeg, which is sitting right there and willing to come right back in. So that's basically 14 teams that have something to play for, and then the Toronto Maple Leafs are about the only team that you can chalk up a win at this point for a while.
Well, and that one scares me because you know how things are there at Air Canada. It's just like, oh, God, here we go again. I mean, it doesn't matter how bad they are. It's always a tough game in that place, and that's a scary game.
If you remember back, that was when Darcy Kuemper, not last season when he was playing really well, but the season before that, he was put into Toronto and got yanked after the first period. I can't remember how many goals he let up, but it was not good. And as you look at the schedule, there's a chance Darcy Kuemper plays tonight. They haven't really said anything about that, and we'll find out about that later today. But if Darcy Kuemper doesn't play today, and keep in mind he hasn't started a game since January 6th, his next best option might be in Toronto, which, of course, is going back to that place. So we'll see what they do with the goal.
Chad, aren't we all a little nervous about the notion of that? I mean, it's almost like, you know, I know we've all been sitting off on the side saying, oh, boy, you know, at some point there has to be something done here, right? You got back-to-backs coming up on Monday in Toronto and then in New York against the very good Islanders. By the way, Minnesota fans can see maybe potential Rookie of the Year Anders Lee. More on that in a minute. But at some level, they're going to have to, it almost feels like a lab experiment here, you know. We're all going to be watching on, to watch the smoke or whatever it is come out. I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but I mean, it's absolutely fair to say we don't know what to expect.
Well, we don't know what to expect. I mean, Dubnyk doesn't really know what to expect. I think if we're being frank, the coaches don't know what to expect. They're kind of playing it by ear, and they would love to give Devin Dubnyk a break at some point, but the question is just when do you do it and how do you do it? They obviously need to give him a break if they're going to be going into a seven-game playoff series with any team, really. So they know that they need to do it. It's just a matter of how and when, and it could be on Long Island, like you brought up. And that's always that's fun now with the New York Islanders, A, being a very good team, and B, they've essentially turned into the Minnesota of East with Anders Lee and Brock Nelson and Nick Leddy. So that'll be
that's
a fun
awesome.
Game. Glad you brought that up.
So speaking of Lee, do you think he could propel through and pass Johnny Hockey for the Rookie of the Year?
I do. I think it's basically a two-man race between those two guys. I think Gaudreau probably has a little bit of an advantage right now. He scored again, I think, last night and even the game before that, but it hasn't gone unnoticed what's been going on Long Island, you know, both in terms of the rookie there and in terms of what the team has done. The New York Islanders are suddenly one of the best teams in the NHL. John Tavares may win the scoring race, so it's not lost on what's going there, and I'm excited. I think we go out there with the Wild around March. Toward the end of March, March 20-something. So
they play there on Tuesday. On Tuesday. So they've got Toronto Monday, back-to-back with Islanders on Tuesday. And then there's a break for a couple of days, then back home with Calgary on Friday, and then Los Angeles. How about that team? They're just not losing. So the pressure is really on Minnesota. I know a lot of talk is get to 94, 95 points. We are aware of that. But I don't think at this stage 500 hockey is going to do it because Dallas isn't losing. They got a lot of ground to make up, of course. But the hard-charging Los Angeles Kings are almost making it impossible because they're going to either take a wild card slot or slide into one of those Pacific Division ones. So for Minnesota, they are clearly not out of the woods yet, and they have to continue winning.
Right, and even if LA were to catch one of those other Pacific spots, they'd be knocking out Calgary, and Calgary's been winning too. So, I mean, this is the point of the year where you just can ill afford to lose 2 points in games that you could have gotten. Even getting a point last night, and the Wild had chances to get that point by going to overtime. That's just really where it comes in handy. And the Wild have a lot of regulation and overtime wins, which is the first tiebreaker. But to get to that point where that would be useful, they need to get to around 95 points. So they've got 14 games left, and you know they'd be much happier if they win 9 games rather than win 8 and see what happens at that point.
I just worry about 500 not being enough, given the way teams are playing here in the West. So, you know, I think they need to win 10 to 11 of those 14 games. You know, afforded a few losses, but you know, not many.
Well, and regardless of that, I mean, even if you get to the playoffs, you don't want to be going into the playoffs after having such a stretch that you have to get back into it after being the NHL's best team for a stretch. You don't want to go into it being a 500 team against playoff teams, against the very teams that you're going to be meeting in the postseason. I mean, they still have, starting tonight, 3 games against St. Louis. They play Nashville 2 more times. They just played Anaheim.
These
are the teams that they're going to be playing in the playoffs. So they need to show that they can skate with these guys.
So Mike Yeo had mentioned in the press conference last night about, you know, every game's a playoff game, and for the Wild, every game's been a playoff game since the middle of January.
Right.
Now, it's a playoff game for everybody, and that brings up a faster, stronger, harder game, and I think as we go back to our original topic, this is going to be the thing that if this team has any weakness, it's going to be in that capacity to be able to recover and keep playing those physical, heavy games. Now, they've been doing that. The thing is can they get into the postseason and continue that? First, can they get that job done? Second, can they get the matchup that they're looking for? And you know, the ironic part is the team that you really love to see them play is the Nashville Predators. And about 3 weeks ago, I would have said no way.
Right. I mean, that's the crazy thing. And let me ask you this, because in my opinion, if you're looking at playoff matchups, and the three potential teams are St. Louis, Anaheim, and Nashville. I think that Nashville is the team that the Wild fans should probably want to face most. I think that it would almost even be a 50-50 series against Nashville. I think Anaheim would be maybe the second team that you'd want to play, but still not an easy series, and I'd probably have to give Anaheim a little bit of an edge there, and I think St. Louis would be the third and final team that you definitely do not want to play. What are your thoughts on that, Phil?
It's interesting. I think Anaheim's my number one that I would not want to see this team play. I think they're cup ready. Personally, I think, oh boy, here we go again. Now there's the Bruce Boudreaux factor, where he's never had a ton of success in the postseason with his clubs, but coaches coach, players play. The other thing about the St. Louis Blues is, I know Elliott's good, and I know Allen's up and down, but I don't think their goaltending is that firm. However, they're a very good team. I think Nashville's number one, St. Louis would be two, and Anaheim would be three, the least likely for my observation.
I think you're onto something with the goaltending in St. Louis. I mean, it's definitely susceptible. My only question there would be if the Wild have enough healthy bodies and bodies that aren't bruised by game six or seven to still be scoring goals. But
exactly.
They still play twice against Nashville, and I think if they continue to play that speed game that they played in Nashville a couple weeks ago, I think that's a matchup that they could very well come out of that series as winners.
Oh, this is great stuff to talk about. Chad, you're getting on the plane. Travel safe to St. Louis. And next week you'll be in studio, correct?
I sure will.
All right. You better get your GPS on. I think you forgot how to get here. We'll talk soon, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll be back with a really great segment or two coming up. It's the Lakeville North Panthers, Trent Eigner, and he's got a couple of special guests with him around the bend. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. What would an On the Ice Radio Show be without a little Rush, David Helmer?
I have no idea.
I mean,
it seemed extremely foreign to me.
May 12th can't get here fast enough.
Absolutely.
Are you coming with us?
If I can.
I'm working on a suite. I think I got one.
Oh, boom.
Trent, are you a Rush fan?
I'd go for some AC/DC Thunderstruck.
Oh,
that's
nothing,
hockey music for
nothing
sure.
Nothing better than that. Do we have that on the playlist today?
Yeah, I can find that.
Put that in when we come out on our second segment, because in the studio right now are the state champs, the Lakeville North Panthers head coach Trent Eigner. Thanks for coming in today, coach.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Absolutely. I have a couple of special guests, too. The anchors on the blue line, Jack McNeely, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning.
And Angela Altavilla, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So we've got a lot of ground to cover here, and, you know, when we get into the makeup of your team was just outstanding, Trent, and we've watched this group of kids grow over the past 3 years together. Some seniors, you've got just junior mix, you've got, you had top six forwards. You could even argue that your third line was as good as any out there as well. Your defensemen were terrific, your goaltender outstanding, and boom, it's a perfect 31-0 record. I mean, I think that's something. After the fact that you guys as players and obviously as a coach are going to look at it and say, whoa, we did that. So when the dust settles and all that ends, Trent, how would you cap this season in a summary? How are you feeling right now?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think you made a good point. The dust definitely needs to settle. And I think that in the course of it settling, you know, you get constant messages, texts, emails from some guys that are very well-respected hockey guys, and when they start to talk about that 31 and that zero at the other end of it, you begin to realize the magnitude of, especially in the state of Minnesota, what you've accomplished in terms of that. And I think, you know, to the degree you mentioned early, the makeup of the team, for me as a coach, I think that it goes fairly unrecognized that this group of kids, you know, had an 11-win season, I bet, if I remember correctly. And so their appreciation of what we've accomplished is very real, in the sense that they didn't step into a situation where we were ringing off 22-win seasons 10 years in a row. So that gives me a great deal of pleasure to see them work through something over the course of 3 years and get to the point we've gotten, which is very special.
Well, and part of that is, and I'm going to play a bit here, and some of our listeners, if you're in the YouTube world or on Twitter quite a bit, you're going to see the pieces that come through on this. But, you know, he's been a very solid mouthpiece, I would say, for the value of high school hockey, and I want to get into that with you guys as players as well, coming from maybe that 11-win campaign and then just rolling it through to what you did this year. But what he talked about is how much your team reminded him of the 2011 Eden Prairie Eagles with Kyle Rau, and I think Letty was gone. He was there the year before. But a lot of guys who are being tugged on to leave and go on to different clubs instead said, you know what, we're gonna see this thing through. And he speaks more on the value of it. And I think when it comes from Mike Randolph, I think this tournament, Trent, before we take this cut, don't you think that Mike really established himself? You and I know this coming in, but he established himself as the elder statesman of the coaching staff, who, when he opens his mouth, as people, we listen.
I think for sure. And I think the one thing that, to his credit, came across is, you know, a level of appreciation for great hockey. And whether he was on the winning side of that or the losing side of that, he's a guy that will just tell you exactly how he feels. And if I've taken one thing, I guess, as a coach away from the tournament, that's of value to me moving forward, it was some of the comments that he made to our group as a whole and to me as a coach. And had we been on the other side of it, I know he would have been as respectful. But to see a guy, you know, have that run, that emotional run that they had, and then not get it done at the end, but be, in my mind, equally as happy for our program because of the way we did it and how he felt our kids prepared well and did things, quote-unquote, the right way, was very, very neat.
Well, let's listen in to Mike.
I just want to make a comment about Lakeville North. They remind me of the Eden Prairie team that beat us in 2011. Trent knows and the brothers know where I stand, but when they beat us in 2011, the finals and longest final game, I went into Eden Prairie locker room. I would have gone. I don't want it to look like I, you know. So Kyle Rawls stayed in school. A bunch of them stayed in school. This is a repeat example of kids staying in school, staying with their buddies, and they'll cherish that moment for the rest of their life. And it's a credit to those kids that they stuck together and the target was on them all year and they went undefeated and they're a true champion. And it's an example of kids don't have to leave early. Those kids will have great college careers or great hockey players and they didn't lose a thing. In fact, they gained a ton by playing in this tournament in front of the big crowds. It's a credit to them. Stick in their community, stick with their families, and they'll always remember it. So.
Jack, we'll turn right to you on that one. You're playing hockey in 2 years at the University of Nebraska Omaha. Going to play next year at Tri-City in the USHL. For his points are that those kids gained a ton. You as a player, knowing you're going to another next two levels, would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know like a lot of us on our team probably could have left our senior year and played junior hockey. But, like, I don't know, I think everybody, like, obviously last year after the championship game, like, just getting embarrassed in front of the whole state, I think we all just wanted to stick together. And, like Coach Randolph said, I mean, we gained so much this year. Like, the bond that our team had together is, like, just, like, we're just going to have the same friendships for the rest of our lives. So it's just, like, unbelievable experience this year. I mean, it's just, we're probably never going to be on a team like this ever again. So I think, yeah, just, like, the memories that we're going to have and then, I mean, it's not like we didn't lose anything as hockey players. Like, we obviously, like, everybody improved a ton. And I mean, like, in practice every day, it's so competitive. So I think, I mean, it couldn't have been any better for everybody on our team. So
this is the On the Ice radio show. That's Jack McNeely. Trent Eigner's in studio. Angelo Altavilla will turn to you. Jack touched on the team and how you guys stayed together as a group and how it's special and how it's even when you play baseball at the University of Nebraska, it's still not going to be your neighbors, your friends. Can you talk about how you guys grew as a group from 11-win team to 31-0-0?
I mean, after that sophomore year, we really just wanted to get back out there and get back working again. And we worked hard over the summer and we just had a lot of fun with each other and grew with each other and got to know each other even better. And then that junior year, we had a great run again. And then, like Jack said, we were really excited to get back our senior year and work hard and try to win that title, and we did.
I'll give this one to either one of the players here. When you watch your team play from upstairs, it looked like you had a bevy, a ton of leaders. Who is your leader? I mean, who wants that one?
I mean, I guess we didn't. I mean, of course we have three great captains, but I mean, we had, what was it, eight seniors, but I could say all the seniors are captains, and I mean, there are some young kids on our team too that were leaders, and I mean, it was just great to see them get involved with just leading and, yeah, just working hard every day, and it's kind of nice to see that too out of the younger guys too.
Jack, did you feel as though there was no guy that was bigger than this team on this club?
Yeah, I think like our seniors probably, I mean, I wouldn't pick out one specific guy, but I think like a lot of the younger guys see like some of the seniors, like the way like we put in work and practice every day, and it's like the way everybody just listens to their coaches and respects each other. I think they just kind of feed on that. So it's just kind of all 20 guys buying in, I think. So I think, I don't know, it's just, I think our senior group this year was really, really strong. And then we had a lot of younger guys step up as leaders too. And I mean, you don't always have to say something. It's just in practice every day and just keep it calm in the locker room when everything doesn't go your way. So I think I think all 20 guys were just kind of bought in together. I think everybody was a good leader, so.
Trent, did you see an evolution there too, as well as Jack touched on practice, where it wasn't just passing time, but these guys were really bringing an effort?
For sure. I mean, that's the one thing that people don't get to appreciate on a daily basis. You know, I'm fortunate, and the kids were fortunate, that we got to play in front of great crowds pretty much all year long, and people had come to appreciate our effort during the games. But to be great and have that type of consistency, that needs to be kind of the mantra every day, whether that's a Monday or a Wednesday. That's probably where our group did the best job of finding ways to focus and challenge themselves. And again, you know, Max said it best, is that it had nothing to do with someone having to say something or this, that, or the other. But when you have a group of kids, you know, hit practice with an intensity that you know will make you better on a daily basis, that's something that's really hard to replicate.
That is great stuff. You guys are sticking here for our next segment. We're speaking with Trent Eigner, Angela Altavilla, Jack McNeely from the state champion Lakeville North Panthers, 31-0-0 this past season. We'll come back with another segment, guys. Stay tuned. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Talking about the father-daughter dance, I just had the lower half is a little bit sore right now. I'm out of shape. I thought I was going to blow an MCL.
We still have a show to do. Let's power through it.
And we're going to make it. We'll find a way. Trent Eigner, Angela Altavilla, and Jack McNeely are in the house. They are from the Lakeville North Panthers, and we got to go there. I asked Trent if it was all right if we went down the hair route. We have to, right, guys? I mean, you know, 2 million views on the all-hair team, and if you haven't seen it and you're a hockey fan, you're certifiably under a rock, let's be honest. And, you know, let's, from you guys, Luke Sepper, the year before in the 2014 deal, the guy that puts us together, who's like majorly anonymous, does anybody even know who that is?
No idea.
I think Sepper knows.
Yeah, Sepper said his daughter played with his little sister.
So. Yeah. Oh, so is he from your area?
I don't know.
Wow.
He said he knew him somehow.
So everybody kind of thought he was like buried up in the White Bear Lake because of the Hair Matters thing, the sponsor that he lost, obviously. Well, anyway, so he said he wanted to see a ponytail. And as I saw him coming up the ice, as they call it, I'm like, oh, he's got a ponytail. That was in the 2014. He had told you guys that he's going to take it out, right?
Yep. In the locker room before the game, he said he was going to, he had a ponytail sitting on the bench in the locker room, and he said he was going to take it out. And everybody kind of thought it was a joke and was like, hey, you're not going to do this. But sure enough, he did it. And
did you notice how proud he was?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Is that who he is?
Yeah, it's like something we were talking about in practice the week before, like just kind of goofing around the locker room and like, except you should wear a ponytail because we watched the 2014 yeah. video. And then in the locker room before the game, I think he was like kind of scared about it, but then he ended up doing it. So yeah, I think, and then afterwards, like his Twitter and like I know John Butchergrass like tweeted at him and like all that stuff. So
he got Butchie out of that's phenomenal. Yeah. Well, here's the great part too is when he did it. So if he was nervous in the locker room, there was like no fear in his game. I mean, that guy was about as comfortable as they come. I mean, he just bang brought it. Yeah. That was awesome. So Trent, obviously, that's a fine line as a coach. You know, these guys all start growing some of their hair. Some of these kids, obviously, because it's a big deal. How do you manage it? You seem to be, from what I can tell, a kind of guy where you let that stuff work itself. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's important. I mean, especially specifically in that situation, I think if you've watched the tournament over the years, you know, whatever it is, let's say it's 5 seconds, that's those kids' little opportunity to have fun and allow themselves to be who they are. You know, the reality is it has no impact on your game. We were in a situation this year, you know, having got to 15-0 and then 20 and 25, where certain little aspects of media and camera coverage before and after games started to pick up, and that was at its apex during the state tournament. And I think that, you know, at least from my perspective, the situation we were in pursuit of perfection is something that our kids had wanted for a long time. So any coverage or any added pressure, perceived or otherwise, that came with it was something that they were going to be comfortable with, and we just did our best to have fun with everything, and understood full well that our success was going to take place, obviously, between the whistles, on the ice, and not a lot of the other stuff really mattered. So if it was fun, let's let the kids enjoy it.
So obviously, that was one of my questions out of the shoot is, The perfect record, was that something you guys set as a goal collectively going into this season? Was that a stated goal?
Yeah, I think obviously. I mean, going into at the end of our junior year, I think like what we said is like, let's go back our senior year and make history. So I think the underlying goal all year was win a state championship. But, I mean, if you could win all the games, obviously. I mean, I always wanted to be able to like make history, and it's obviously we did. So it's just something that we're going to be able to remember for the rest of our lives. So.
And Angelo, you got the target on your backs, as obviously you were a state finalist the year before, in the state tournament the year before that, and here you go. I mean, everybody knows you're a top team. Do you feel like everybody brought their A-plus game every night against you guys, and that made you better?
Yeah, of course. We'd be playing teams that, I mean, they would practice all week just looking forward to us and maybe blow off a few games before us, and we just had to bring it every single night, and like you said, we had a huge target on our back, and we had to bring it every night too, and we did.
And Trent, from that perspective of keeping your kids focused not on game 31 but game number 10, how hard was that, and what type of tools did you utilize from the coaching realm to keep it to a game-by-game, shift-by-shift type of situation?
Well, I mean, obviously I've been fortunate enough to be around guys that are very good at this. In terms of coaching and coaching quality kids and good teams with high expectations. And, you know, I think, you know, the reality of the approach we took in terms of our season was to just step back and in a relaxed setting in our locker room in sweats, you know, nothing formal, is to take a look at our team as a whole. And all we did is kind of pick out the preseason rankings, and we were number 2. So given that that was the situation, if you were to look at our schedule, that would mean that there was one game on our schedule that people would pick us not to win. And given that we could prepare and focus and play really hard the rest of the games, we'd have an opportunity to win. And I think that allowed our players to just kind of step back and go, you know, that kind of is reality. You know, the challenge is not to win 31 games. The challenge is to play good every night. And given that we do, we're going to have an opportunity to be on the right side of the scoreboard in all, you know, but one of these games. And that game was an early game with Edina. So it kind of just, we left it at that. And it allowed us, like I said, to relax and really concentrate on things that we felt we could do well. And I think a funny story is, I think our worst game of the year in terms of making mistakes and not being tight defensively was our first game of the year at Farmington, and we made a bunch of mistakes that they capitalized on, and it was their home opener, and they played very well. But 8 seconds into overtime, I think Jack Paling scored the game winner. And his younger brother, Ryan, came right up to me within seconds and said, "Hey, Ike's 31-0. It's still intact."
You guys had to come back, too, in that one. If I remember, you're trailing in the third late. Was that the case?
We were up all game.
Yeah. Oh, you were?
We never had we were tied for a while, but we never
Okay, yeah. I remember looking at that box score, and I think everybody knows Farmington's a good club, and they had a really good Bantamrun. I think they were a year younger than you guys, essentially juniors from that group.
Yeah.
So I mean, for many in my role, it wasn't like, oh, you know, but it was one of those things where you walk away saying, oh, you gave up goals, and you obviously had the goaltending question. Ryan Edquist, I'll tell you what, I mean, he was an absolute rock. You guys defensively are so good. I mean, and the one thing that we talked about a lot is the first thing people will bring up to me are the Palings and the brothers and you know, the offensive side of things. And the first thing I would deflect is they don't get their opportunities if you guys defensively don't do your jobs and move the puck the way you do and defend the way you do. But if you were beat and if there was an issue, that kid was absolutely lights out. Can either one of you touch on what Ryan Edquist brought to your club this year?
Yeah, he's amazing. Even better kid, and he just one of the hardest workers in practice. And every game, he just brought it, and we kind of fed off him a little, and we kind of looked up to him, his work ethic, and yeah.
Jack, he was one and done. There were not a lot of juicy rebounds with that guy, was there?
No, I mean, like Coach always says, like he's kind of like before games, he just prepares. Like, he's a professional, and I think a lot of thing of his game that's kind of overlooked is how he can play the puck. I know for like me and Alki.
Oh.
I mean, like half, like I know, like East in the championship game, they dump it in every time, and he didn't set it up for us or make the first breakout pass, and it's just unbelievable for us how much easier it is. So I think he's probably the best goalie I've ever played with, and I think a lot of us agree. So
Trent, a really I don't even like using the word underrated, but underappreciated, I think would be the word player on your team. I think was him.
Yeah, for sure, and I think you know the kids alluded to it. His contribution to the team was so much more than playing goalie. He was just an absolute role model. You know, normally your goaltenders are surrounded with drama and superstition and all this other stuff. And, you know, Eddie was just all about work and poise and patience. And I think he provided our kids with a ton of confidence and a belief in their preparation and watching him do his thing. And that was extremely special. And I think, you know, it's, if you're going to have a team in a run like this, there needs to be a lot of guys willing to sacrifice a little bit of themselves and step out of the spotlight. And I think we had a ton of guys that were willing to do that. You know, people would talk about these two guys one week and how much offensive firepower we had. And the reality is we had four of the best defensemen in the state and a great goaltender. And then the next thing it would be about they're only giving up 1.3 goals a game and they're staunch defensively. And we got a second and third line that are producing. And so, you know, everybody's got to be willing to give a little bit of themselves, you know, to get that kind of mojo going all year long.
Angelo, the crowds, record crowds were insane. You've played in three of them there. Was this one different? Take the wins and you know the result away. Mm-hmm. Did this one feel different to you?
I mean, yeah, you could say it did a little. I mean, there's obviously a ton of fan game. I think it was 21,000. They said
incredible.
Yeah. I mean, but when you get on the ice, you really just gotta block it out, and I mean, just play your game and can't really worry about the outside factors. And yeah,
Jack, how about you?
I don't know. I think I didn't, like, a lot of us didn't really realize it till after we won the championship. Mm-hmm. I think, like, you just kind of, like, soak it in. Like, it's just, like, so unbelievable. And I think, like, a lot of us, we had, like, experience. Obviously, it's our third state tournament for all the seniors. So I think, like, that's huge for the first couple games, especially the first game. So you're not, the nerves aren't too bad. But I think, I mean, like the crowd just, like, I don't know, just, like, gives you a little bit of extra energy, I think. And, like, obviously, it's incredible, and like you go to like all these other places in the summer and stuff, and all the guys are like asking you what it's like. Like they just wish that they had the opportunity to play. So it's really really
you're
cool.
Big timers.
Yeah,
I mean, and now you know what, you're gonna have a suite in 20 years at the XL Energy Center, and all you guys with your coach are gonna be sitting there looking down at the ice with your jays on, you know, bringing it, and Sepper's still gonna have the ponytail. And it's perfect. But you know, Trent, from the overall health of high school hockey and you know, Buchagras tweeting at guys and plays of the week on ESPN and just huge numbers on 45. I saw their numbers and they were enormous for watching you guys and all of these kids play. I think it's erupted this year. It's nothing new, but it just feels like you talk Indiana basketball, you talk Texas football, you don't see the social media outbreak like you do here. Would you agree with that? And what about the health of high school hockey?
I think it's 100%. That it's insane for a guy like myself, 44 years old, who's not all over the social media stuff. I get a lot from our kids. I enjoy sharing, you know, the things with them that they talk to me about and what's going on. In terms of the health of high school hockey, I think it couldn't be better. And it's obviously a different perspective from a coach to a fan. I'll never understand. The one thing I'll staunchly say is that there is never a negative in staying in high school hockey. There are situations where kids make decisions to do this, to do that. I never understand what race they're in to get where it is they're going. But, you know, I will make that blanket statement that it's never a bad thing to stay. And the competitive games and what you saw down the stretch, I would love to see somebody in a junior game or a midget game emulate what it's like for a goaltender or a defenseman to play in front of 20,000 for a state title. If you can emulate that and tell me that there's not positives that come from that, I'd love to hear the argument, but I don't see it.
I completely agree with you, and that is what it's about. You guys are a model team, a lot of fun to watch. Angelo, good luck to you at Nebraska playing some shortstop. More importantly, good luck this year.
Yeah, thank you.
You're getting on the field, literally on the field on Monday, right?
Yep.
No gym, none of that garbage. No domes.
No.
That's awesome. Good luck.
Thank you.
You swinging the bat right now?
Yep.
Awesome. And then you off to Tri-City to play some junior hockey, and then you get the great Dean Blaze, Jack, at UNO, Jack McNeely. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And Trent, of course, next year, you're now defending champs. The target will be even larger. You ready?
Can it be larger?
Well, it's got to be.
we'll
so good.
The AC/DC and we'll deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. A little thunderstruck. Guys, thanks for coming in. It was an absolute blast.
Thank
you. I said, we could do a two-hour show just rapping about this stuff all day.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to be talking to Billy Robertson, the commissioner of the Western Collegiate Hockey Association. Derek Plant as well from UMD, if he's available. And all that coming up on the On the Ice radio show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. We continue with the On the Ice radio show. Bill Robertson joins us from the Western Collegiate Hockey Association, the commissioner, as his teams in his league are underway right now in their first round playoff games. A lot of overtime games. Good morning to you, Bill, and you have to be thrilled to see these extra sessions as the commissioner. Thanks for joining us here today.
You bet, P. It's great to be on this morning on a beautiful Saturday. But to answer your question, more than anything, it's wonderful to see the competition so far after one day of playoffs in the WCHA, and so happy and thrilled that the lower seeds are having a good time of playing against the higher seeds. So that makes it for fun and entertaining hockey. And most importantly, the fan base of the WCHA, they get a chance to watch some terrific hockey that's being played right now. And as you know, there's no better time than playoff hockey.
It absolutely is dialed up an extra notch. Now, Alabama Huntsville travels to Houghton to take on Michigan Tech. That's what their first game that they're hosting at home in quite some time, and they were taken to the limit. I think 89 minutes later, Tyler Heinonen finally scores in double overtime, I think it was, to pick up the win. For Alabama Huntsville, they're going to have to come back today. I'm sure Coach Mel Pearson said that we don't want to go three games here. They're going to have a game in front of them, aren't they?
They are, and they played, I believe, they were into three overtimes before that was decided last night in Houghton, Michigan, and Michigan Tech has a great team, and certainly the teams that are vying for the national spotlight certainly do not want to play three games and go down to the wire. But at the same time, the fans love to see these three-game series and have them notched up at 1-1 and have the deciding game on a Sunday. But if you're the home team, you want to finish these series quickly so you can get on to the WCHA Final Five, which is next week in St. Paul.
Obviously, that comes down after these series are completed. Bowling Green is up on Northern Michigan 1-0. They had a 3-2 win. Ferris State beat Bemidji State by a score of 4-1. And Minnesota State took Lake Superior State to the woodshed 9-2. So Tech, Bowling Green, Ferris State, and Minnesota State are all up 1-0 in their series. The winner of these series will now advance to the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul to play in the Final Five, and which it's aptly titled from its great historical perspective. But really, it's a semifinal, correct? It's four teams?
Correct. It's four teams playing in St. Paul, and the winners of these series that you just outlined will compete next weekend on March 20th and 21st at the Xcel Energy Center in one of the premier college championships in all of college hockey and maybe in all of sports.
So for those that are listening, can you take everybody through the pairwise rankings, the playoff situation? You know, if you win your playoff series, are you an automatic bid? And if you're not within the top 16 of the pairwise, does that knock teams out? How does all that shake down?
Well, there's a lot to it, but certainly in the WCHA, the winner of the conference tournament gets an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament, and that's for the other five conferences in college hockey as well. They get automatic bids, and then after that, it really goes to the pairwise where you're ranked is really where it's at. So the teams that should win are the ones that you want to win. For the WCHA, we believe that we're going to have three teams into the tournament and possibly four if there was an upset and somebody advanced through the Final Five in St. Paul. That would be helpful to us to get four teams in. But right now, as it stands, that is how it looks like. Mankato, Michigan Tech, and Bowling Green all have real opportunities right now to advance, and they're ranked high in the pairwise rankings. So that's how we see it from our end, and I've talked a lot to folks at College Hockey Incorporated and others in the college hockey world, and most believe that the pairwise rankings is really what's important, and then winning your conference championships are the ways that you're best served to get into the NCAA tournament, which will be the following weekend, the last weekend in March.
The beauty is if you're below the Mendoza line, that magical number 16, and you have the ability to win your playoff postseason tournament, you can propel yourself to the NCAA tournament. But where it gets nerve-wracking are for the teams that are on the cusp of that could get knocked out if they don't win their playoff. And we're talking about perhaps Massachusetts, Lowell, Harvard, St. Cloud State. You know, I doubt Minnesota. They've kind of worked their way up through the Big Ten schedule. But those are teams that will have to be, you know, kind of take care of some business and win some games. In your perspective, with Minnesota State and Michigan Tech at number 2 and number 5 and Bowling Green at number 11, or 9 rather, as you said, they're pretty comfortable then.
Well, yes, right now they are, and they want to win their series. And as we talked earlier, they want to win those as quickly as possible. And then there's a team like Bemidji State, who, if they could advance and beat Ferris State and then get to the Final Five and win that, would get the automatic bid. Then the other three teams in our conference that you mentioned, Minnesota State, Mankato, Michigan Tech, and Bowling Green, all would have to hope that they would get bids, and I'm fairly certain Mankato and Michigan Tech will get bids, and we're hopeful that Bowling Green will as well. But if they win this series in two games, they're putting themselves in a really good position. So I look at it for us as three teams most likely will get into the tournament, and hopefully a fourth if some things happen. But there's a lot yet to be played in all of college hockey, and upsets, as you know, are part of the norm when it comes to playoffs in the NCAA, not only hockey, but basketball and other sports. So it'll be so entertaining for your listeners and the fan base to watch going forward, not only tonight and potentially tomorrow on Sunday, but also during the conference tournaments next weekend.
That's a lot of fun. How does one get tickets, and do you have packages for the WCHA Final Five?
Well, Pete, we do. We have packages right now on sale through Ticketmaster.com for $69, which gets you a ticket for each game of the WCHA Final Five, which is three games. Two on Friday starting at 4 o'clock and the second game at 7:30. Then that's on March 20th, which is Friday. Then on March 21st, we have our championship game at 6 p.m. at XL Energy Center. Single session tickets are on sale at the box office, and those are $35. And it's a great value for a fan of college hockey, and you're going to see potentially three of the top 16 teams in all of the sport right now in Mankato, Michigan Tech and Bowling Green and hopefully another fourth team. And it should be a lot of fun. We have a lot of events going on in St. Paul during that time, and we'll have a fan fest, and we'll have an event at the Mall of America. And for more information on all of that, you can go to www.wcha.com for more information. But exciting time for us as we prepare for our tournament in St. Paul. And we're hoping it goes extremely well, and there's lots of fans that come out and visit, Pete.
Bill, that sounds like a plan to me. I appreciate your time. College hockey, always fun to talk about with you. And, of course, the WCHA in their playoffs. Thanks for taking the time out. Now get outside and hit some golf balls, will you?
I'm going to try, my friend. Thank
you. All right, good luck to you. Thank you.
All right.
That was Bill Robertson, the WCHA commissioner, joining us here today. In the NCHC last night, a couple of big wins. Denver University beats UMD. That one, 4-3. A great hockey game once again. Denver University defeating UMD. That in Denver. North Dakota defeats Colorado College 5-1. It was UNO falling to St. Cloud State. Another overtime thriller. That one by a score of 2-1. And then in other action, the fourth and final NCHC game. I'm getting that score for you here. The computer's taking a while to load. David.
That'll happen.
I just love that, don't you? It's just creeping along.
There's a
here.
Lot of traffic at 9:58 in the morning.
Yeah, there must be. It absolutely. The other game, of course, how could I forget? Western Michigan and Miami of Ohio were in action as well yesterday. It was Miami winning 5-3. So all of those teams, Miami, UNO, North Dakota, and Denver University, are all up one game to none, and they are all in action today. And then game three will be, if necessary, tomorrow. The Minnesota Golden Gophers defeated the Penn State Nittany Lions yesterday by a score of 5-0. Kyle Rau, of course, the big player there, got a little bit of help. Adam Wilcox, one game away from Kellen Briggs' record shutout mark.
It's not bad at all, is it?
That's a lot of goose eggs there. A great show today. Thanks for joining us. Next week, Chad Graff's actually going to be here in studio. Can you believe it? Is he even a part of the show anymore?
Like. I just don't know. I recognize his voice still a little bit, yeah. But when I see him, I'm like, wait, who's this guy?
I don't recognize his voice.
I'm not letting him in.
Only on the phone lines is what I recognize it from, yeah. Kind of that distorted thing. That's going to do it. David Helmer, great work. You just pulled it out of your hat today. The Rabbit, great work.
Well, thanks. We've been great.
As always, the best show on town, right?
That's right.
Self-promotion at its finest. This is the On the Ice Radio Show. We'll be back next week. So long, everybody.